from the National Catholic Register. This is Register Radio, bringing light and clarity to the news and topics that affect your life.
10 years ago this month, Pope Benedict XVI expanded the use of the traditional Latin Mass through a decree known as Summorum Pontificum. For those who follow liturgical movements, it was a major document. But what impact has it had? Did it accomplish what Pope Benedict hoped? Does it really matter to the Catholics in the pew? We discuss this and more on Register Radio this week. I'm Jeanette DeMello, Editor-in-Chief of the National Catholic Register and co-host for Register Radio.
And I'm Matthew Bunsen, the Register Senior Editor. This is one of those rare opportunities, Jeanette, to be able to talk about Benedict XVI, the Latin Mass, Cardinal Robert Sarra, and the Liturgy Wars.
And we have two excellent guests on, and they're going to make this conversation so much fun, because one is Chris Carsons, who is a director for the Office of Sacred Worship in the La Crosse Diocese in Wisconsin. He's also editor of Adoremus Bulletin. He writes for the Register frequently, and we want him to write as much as he can. And we also have Kathy Schiffer, a Catholic blogger who writes at the Register, as well as her own blog, Seasons of Grace. And I'm so grateful to have both of them on for this very important topic. Why? Because this topic matters so much to our readers, and I know to our listeners as well. Whenever we put anything on the Register's website on liturgy, we get a tremendous response. Anything on the liturgy, we get a tremendous response. And so we know this is a very important topic for the Church and for our listeners, and that's why we're delving into this document that was published 10 years ago, that many people may not even know the official Latin name for, but we're going to talk about it right now. So, Summorum Pontificium. Chris, what is this decree, and why is it important?
Thanks, Jeanette. Summorum Pontificum is a form of a letter called a motu proprio, which I guess means kind of on behalf of the Pope's own intention and with his own authority, even though he had prayed about it and consulted others as well. So Summorum Pontificum, and he talks about the Supreme Pontiffs is the Latin, the English of Summorum Pontificum. The Supreme Pontiffs over the centuries have shown great care in their oversight and love and direction and leadership with the celebration of the Roman Missal. And so his letter, Summorum Pontificum, is meant to do that same thing, to direct the use of the Roman Rite Mass.
And What was the use of the Roman Rite Mass, the Latin Mass, before this document?
Well, immediately before it, it was the Novus Ordo, or what came to be called after Summorum Pontificum, the ordinary form. So this would have been the Missal promulgated by Blessed Paul VI following the decrees of the Second Vatican Council. So that's what, I suppose, immediately followed Summorum Pontificum, although as Pope Benedict says in his letter, there were certain indults and permissions all the way, you know, even before Summorum Pontificum, but after the council, that gave permission or encouragement for bishops to let certain groups celebrate according to the, I guess you'd say, the preconciliar missal, the missal that came after Trent, or what's called now the extraordinary form. But what Summorum Pontificum sought to do was to give to bishops and to the Church some clear directives about how the Missal of 1962 has a number of names now. So the Missal of St. John the 23rd, or the Extraordinary Form, or the Missal of 1962, how that can be used today alongside with the ordinary form of the Mass. So it sought to bring some clarity to the question of how these two missals could be used side by side.
Yeah, the release of Summorum Pontificum by Pope Benedict was certainly greeted with a great deal of tumult. What do you think Pope Benedict was hoping to accomplish with this?
Yeah, he says very explicitly what he was trying to do was to effect an interior reconciliation in the heart of the Church. He begins so when Summorum Pontificum came out, he sent along with it what's sometimes called just the accompanying letter that goes along with Summorum Pontificum. And that lays out really in more detail what his intentions were. And it was to effect this reconciliation in the heart of the Church especially with groups that were divided from the church, especially over its celebration of the Mass, according to the Missal of Paul VI. So its intention was reconciliation, union, unity, all those things that really the liturgy, and in a special way, the Mass is meant to reflect and even cause.
Now, that's not exactly what happened, and I'm going to bring Kathy in here, into the conversation here. Kathy recently wrote a blog at the Register that did really well. A lot of readers looked at this blog. It's titled, Could Cardinal Sarah Bring an End to the Liturgical Wars? And she uses that term. Kathy used the term liturgical wars. What was intended really to bring about unity, as Chris says, really seemed to agitate a liturgical war. Kathy, define that. What is the liturgical war you speak of?
You know, I see this happen, and it happened in the comm box of my article. I felt like Catholics were there fighting one another, and whereas Cardinal Sarah and Pope Benedict before him wanted to open the church to both forms of liturgy, what happened is one kind, the traditionalists are more likely to say, oh no, the Novus Ordo is not a legitimate form of the Mass. And some people who attend the Novus Ordo Mass were saying, no, let's not go backward. And they were not willing to accept one another's position or preference.
And this is still happening. I mean, that happened right away, but it seems to be still happening today, 10 years later.
That's right. You know, our family took a trip to Europe for the first time in 2000, and we drove all around Europe. And we attended Mass in every language, in German, in French, in Italian, and we never knew what they were saying. And you get to the point in time where world travel has become the norm for many people, and yet the only Mass that a lot of people will accept is the Novus Ordo in English.
Mm-hmm.
And we would have found it wonderful sitting in a German cathedral had the Mass been in Latin.
Right.
I would have known what they were saying.
Right. There are some very practical advantages, I think, to the Latin Mass. I guess, Chris, you write about the same thing. You write about these liturgical wars, and you say in so many words in your piece, which is titled Why Benedict the 16th Wrote Summorum Pontificum, and you write that this is so much more important than missals, ministers, rites, and rubrics, that you want to go beyond that. And, like, what's more important than that, right? what does the Catholic in the pew actually gain in all of this?
Well, in some ways, it's up to the Catholic in the pew to decide what he or she is going to gain. This little insight, I guess, came from the early liturgical movement that Cardinal Sarah would speak about in his own address on the anniversary of Summorum Pontificum, where he talks about the liturgy wars. He says they're an aberration. It's inconceivable to celebrate the liturgy while having in one's heart feelings of fratricidal struggle. Mm. And he refuses to pit these two missals against each other. You know, the whole point of the liturgy is to effect a reconciliation, not only in the heart of the church, but in my own heart. I think what my piece was trying to say is that, you know, we've come to think of liturgical change principally about the missal or about the rites or the rubrics or things like that. How can we change those to best suit ourselves? Whereas in the early liturgical movement with Pius X and early Joseph Ratzinger and others, it had nothing to do really with the missals and the rites and the words and the music, but it had everything to do with forming people and their own hearts to enter into the mystery. So while it's kind of easy in some ways, I mean, it's still difficult to just let our discussions talk about how we can change the celebration of the rites, really the end game is to change me and not the rite.
Mm.
You have the impression, though, and this is for both Chris and Kathy, that so many of our problems, we don't blame the Second Vatican Council, but so many of our problems seem to start with Sacrosanctum Concilium and the Vatican Council's document on reforming the liturgy. Why is that?
Well, I'll go first. I think you know, Pope Benedict himself will say in his letters that there were, it seemed like for many, the council mandated creativity. And so people experienced liturgical celebrations that were not according to the mind of the church. They lacked any sense of transcendence or otherworldliness, any gravity or seriousness or prayerfulness. And so that gets associated with the council. But as Cardinal Seurat will say in his letter, Summorum Pontificum needs to be read in the context of the Second Vatican Council, its liturgical movement, and its constitution on the sacred liturgy. So, again, this is part of the, what's the expression the Pope Benedict uses about this hermeneutic of discontinuity or rupture? You know, Cardinal Seurat and Pope Benedict are trying to get us to read all of these things in the continuity of the Church's longstanding tradition.
So this is Register Radio with Matthew Bunsen and Jeanette DeMello. We're talking about the Pope's motu proprio, Pope Benedict XVI's famous motu proprio, Summorum Pontificum. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, our conversation will continue.
Bishop Robert Barron talks about the importance of the National Catholic Register.
You know, the Register delivers something which is extremely important because you won't get it from the mainstream media, namely the Catholic context and perspective. Sometimes the mainstream media will pretend, oh, they don't have a perspective. They're just giving the news neutrally. Well, no one does that. Everyone's got a perspective. What they often bring is a sort of secularist ideology. The National Catholic Register brings a robustly Catholic take on the world, and that's indispensably important.
For a free 6-issue trial of the National Catholic Register, go to ncregister.com and click on the 6 free issue banner or call 800-421-3230 for your 6 free issues. And as you await your first issue, enjoy our online content.
Let's return to Register Radio on EWTN.
And welcome back to Register Radio. I'm Matthew Bunsen, co-host of Register Radio with Jeanette DeMello, our editor-in-chief here at the National Catholic Register, continuing our conversation with liturgist Chris Carstens, as well as Register contributor Kathy Schiffer. And our conversation today is a controversial one on Summorum Pontificum, Pope Benedict XVI's decree on the Latin Mass.
And Kathy, you know, one of the things you wrote about that I really wanted to bring into the picture is Cardinal Seurat's, sort of fix for the liturgical wars that we've been speaking about. What did Cardinal Seurat have to say just July 7th, I think it was, just a few weeks ago?
He had a number of suggestions. It sounded to me that what he was really proposing is a new Mass that incorporates the best elements or some of the elements from the Latin Mass, traditional Latin Mass, and from the Novus Ordo. He saw, for example, that it would be a good idea to have a shared calendar of feasts. There are some feasts that are celebrated in one missal but not the other, and they would use the same readings each day regardless of which Mass was being celebrated. And I liked this a lot. He called for an end to the term the reform of the reform, which has become synonymous with dominance of one clan over another, and it becomes a way that people kind of wield a club against one another. So he preferred to speak of reconciliation, liturgical reconciliation, because there should be no opponent within the church, and he suggests using the phrase the mutual enrichment of the rites.
Yeah, that's really, it's really quite beautiful. You list these different, I guess, steps that could be taken in your blog. Could Cardinal Seurat bring an end to the liturgical wars? I think it's important that all of us kind of take into consideration these steps and our own frame of mind when we are at a liturgy. I mean, there are often things about the liturgy itself that can distract us, whether we're going to an extraordinary form of the Mass, which I went to. I don't typically go to each Sunday, but I went during Lent, and it was the low Mass. It was completely silent, and I had my kids there, and it was a difficult experience for me. And I could have come back, you know, completely disgruntled from that experience. Or, you know, we're at a Novus Ordo Mass, and something musically goes quite wrong, if you will, and you can come back completely gruntled. But really, we must ask ourselves, what are we there for? And Chris, I think you, in your piece, point to what I think Pope Benedict wanted us to get out of the Mass. Can you talk a little bit more about what his hopes were in writing the document?
His hopes were ultimately to make saints out of the participants who go to either form of the celebration of the Mass. And again, it's, you know, in this age of conciliar change and post-conciliar ritual change, I think it's just easy to forget that that's really sort of the end game, that the holier I can become, the more God is glorified. Now, the ritual celebration is a privileged means to, you know, to get me to be a saint. But in too much talk, I think about the liturgy, there's just too much on, you know, how to tweak and adapt and adjust the rites, which is an important thing to do, and this is what Cardinal Seurat is bringing to the fore. But with not enough emphasis on you know, the recipient and what he needs to bring to it. So, you know, again, Kathy's the headline on Kathy's blog is, could Cardinal Seurat bring an end to the liturgy wars? Well, he can help, but in the end, it's going to be up to me and my kids and my friends and the people in the pew next to me.
Chris,
I really appreciate that. One of the things that Chris did emphasize, that he has this emphasis on changing the hearts of the participants. I found myself thinking, as I read comments where people were shouting at me in all capital letters,
mm-hmm.
my reaction was, don't you see that you're the person he wants to change?
Yeah.
That he wants you to grow in holiness.
Yes, I don't understand.
Beautiful, excuse me, in his letter that accompanied Summorum Pontificum, you know, he brings this quote from St. Paul's second letter to the Corinthians, where he says, our heart is wide. You are not restricted by us, but you are restricted by your own affections. In return, widen your hearts also. That's what he wants of us. So.
Absolutely. You know, and you just said it. I was going to ask you, why do you think people get so disturbed, and why is this a war, and why has it become something that we scream in all caps about? And I think you just said it, it's because of our affections, and there is a way to be overly attached to certain forms.
Yeah, but you know, I guess if we look on the bright side of this, it speaks to how important people still hold the sacred liturgy, and that's a good and beautiful thing. When it's better than being apathetic, I suppose, about it. It is very important, and people do love it and see it as the source of their spiritual life. That's a good thing.
Absolutely.
But, you know, letting ourselves be going from being deformed to reformed through the power of the liturgy is hard work.
It's striking in Cardinal Seurat's speech that he talks about, among his proposals, reception of communion on the tongue while kneeling, and the priest, as was customary, he notes in the traditional liturgy, should keep their four fingers together after consecrating the host, and with the added point that this demonstrates the care, reverence, and importance which the priest regards the body of Christ. Those two little things right there strike me as the sort of thing that really annoys people who are so-called Novus Ordo Catholics. So how can we bridge that?
I don't know. You know, years ago, I attended Mass. I had the privilege to attend Mass in the Virgin Islands. The people in this humble little church sang the roof off the place. They used mm-hmm. steel drums and guitars, and but it was so holy. They were so devout, and that was evident that in their lives, the church was really important, and it didn't matter. What has happened in our culture for many American Catholics is that we have divided ourselves. It's like pro and anti-abortion forces. I mean, for God's sakes, there are people who believe that that those who pray Novus Ordo are not really Catholics. That difference is something that Cardinal Seurat in the emphasis on reverence in what's really the Novus Ordo Mass, having the communion on the tongue while kneeling, that is a way of drawing everybody back to the center. I think it's wonderful.
It is wonderful. Mm-hmm. And actually, Chris, I would ask you, I mean, you've been editing now the Adoramus Bulletin, very important work started by the late Helen Hull Hitchcock, who we all miss. First, how is the work there at Adoramus going? And then secondly, I wanted to ask you about things that you would recommend that we read to help enrich our own experience of the liturgy.
Yeah, well, thanks be to God, the Adoramus Bulletin is still carrying on the good work that that Helen and Father Pokorsky and Father Fessio started now 20 or 21 years ago, which it speaks to the unique offerings that they had, but also again to the people's interest in the liturgy. So we're very grateful for that. You know, what we're able to offer is Orthodox thinking in line with the magisterium and its tradition. That's accessible to many people. It's not polemical or mm-hmm. political or argumentative. It's not Pollyanna either. But we hope to, you know, after really the model of maybe Pope Benedict, you know, get to the heart of what's really happening in the liturgy, both in its celebration and how I might plug into it. So that would be one good place to start reading, is Adoramus Bulletin. We had a couple entries as well on Summorum Pontificum. Other things, you know, at the end of, for example, Cardinal Seurat's letter on 10 years of Summorum Pontificum, he recommended these paths into, you know, how we ourselves might change. One of them was to become formed in light of the liturgical teaching and theology of the Catechism of the Catholic Church. So that is an excellent starting ground, and it's really written not dryly at all. It's very beautiful, this part two of the Catechism of the Catholic Church. The Church's own documents, the Constitution on the Sacred Liturgy, for example, or some of its theological introductions mm-hmm. to the various ritual books are beautiful. Pope Benedict's The Spirit of the Liturgy is an excellent place to begin, as is next year Romano Guardini's book called The Spirit of the Liturgy Turns a Century Old. That's in some ways what really got this liturgical ball moving.
That's right.
So I'd recommend it's available via EWTN, in fact. That's a beautiful thing to read as well.
Well, Kathy, I'll turn this part of the conversation back over to you, too, because you and I are kind of the lay people here with Chris making this a part of a great big part of his life, you know, teaching on liturgy. What about you? Do you recommend anything that we can read to help deepen our experience of liturgy?
Well, I remember Romano Guardini's Spirit of the Liturgy as one that I also loved. It's been a number of years since I read it. I'm going to have to dig around through my bookshelves. I wonder if perhaps we need some help from our priests. Mm-hmm. I mean, my reaction was, this is great, but the reverence, the silence that he calls for in his letter, periods of silence so that we can ponder the mystery, that's something that has to come not with, like, liturgical honky-tonk, but, you know, a few moments of prayerful silence after communion. And we need a pastor to encourage that. And to explain why that's what we're doing. We're not just sitting there twiddling our thumbs. We are really contemplating what has just happened, what has just come into our hearts, who has just come into our hearts. And I'd like to see it go in that direction. I'd like to see maybe seminary formation that stresses the need to help people to feel reverent.
That's absolutely right. I think the priest sets a tone that's so important for all of us, and I hope that many are being renewed now. And, you know, Pope Francis is no stranger to these liturgical wars, having dealt mm-hmm. with them in his own diocese. Where is Pope Francis on liturgy now? If he's looking at the document 10 years later, the Latin Mass, what is he saying? What is he encouraging? Chris, can you answer that?
No, I don't think I can. it's very difficult to say. And of course, you know, there's things that we might read, and then but imagine. I think if you see photographs or footage of him saying mass, he's always very very reverent, very serious, very sacred, and very silent. So it's actually he doesn't write a lot. He doesn't say a lot on liturgical celebrations. He does speak about silence quite a bit. Mm-hmm. And adoration, but I don't know what particular norms he might put forward in the future about liturgical reform or anything like that. So,
I had somebody mention to me just recently that he celebrates Mass in both forms with approximately the same regularity. I don't know if that's true. It surprised me a little bit, and I have not been at his daily masses to know, but somebody did say, yes, he celebrates in the extraordinary form frequently.
That would be smart in the current climate that we know mm-hmm. we're still working. We're still working on this unity, so it would make sense for him mm-hmm. to do that.
Unfortunately, we are out of time. I'd love to continue this conversation. I know, Jeanette, you would as well, but we are... unfortunately, have to bring this to a close. Chris Carstens, thank you so much for joining us, and Kathy Schiffer.
Thank you, Matthew. Thanks, Jeanette.
Well, I think this is a topic, Jeanette, that we're going to be hearing quite a bit of over the next couple of months. Rumors are persistent that Pope Francis is not a big fan of Summorum Pontificum, so we'll have to see how all of that plays out. I can guarantee, though, that whatever does play out, we're going to be covering it in the pages of the National Catholic Register, aren't we?
That's absolutely right, Matthew. It was a good conversation. It's one I'm sure we'll hear about, this conversation on liturgy. But for more information on the Adoremus Bulletin, go to adoremus.org. And remember to read Chris Carson's piece, Why Pope Benedict Wrote Summorum Pontificum, and Kathy Schiffer's post, Could Cardinal Seurat Bring an End to the Liturgical Wars, at ncregister.com. Thanks for joining us on Register Radio here on EWTN. For Matthew Bunsen and our producer, Jeff Burson, I'm Jeanette DeMello. Until next week, God bless.
For more information about the National Catholic Register and about Register Radio, go to ncregister.com. Podcasts of Register Radio are posted on ncregister.com and on ewtn.com. Join us next week at this time for Register Radio on the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.